That's so much better than I could have done, right? First of all, I want to thank Nick Hutchins for helping us edit this video. I want to thank all the people that participated in these interviews as we talked to them about life groups. And I just say dittos on what they said. So I encourage you, if you've never considered being a part of a life group before, you just thought, well, I don't think I want to do it, this would be a great time to jump in and give it a shot. We're trying to be flexible this year with our life groups. And by the way, if you want to get your phone out right now and shoot it at this QR code, you can. But there will be other ways for you to connect and get signed up for life groups. In fact, we're going to have a table right outside that Kurt and Aaron Whittington are going to be working this table right outside these doors. If you want to do it the old-fashioned way and just sign up with paper, you can do it that way. We're going to send out links and emails. You can go to your bulletin right now. There is a link on the page in the bulletin this morning. And we're going to have sign-ups for like the next 2 weeks. So now through a week from the following Sunday, you'll have opportunities. You're going to be getting some more information about that. But it is a wonderful way to do life with others, to grow in Jesus, and encourage you to consider that this morning. So I want to kind of shift gears here a little bit and start out with this proposition, and that is this. I believe that God has a plan and a purpose for us. I believe that God has a plan and a purpose for you. I believe God has a plan and a purpose for me. So when you go to a passage like Psalm 139 and you see there wonderful attributes of God, God is omnipresent. God is all-knowing. If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths of the earth, you are there. Before there's a word on my tongue, Lord, you know it. And then later on in this psalm, the psalmist says, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. And while it was King David who penned these words, the poet and the musician that he was, I believe they can apply to any one of us here. But when it comes right down to it, God can have a plan and a purpose for us and have things that he desires for us, but we have an individual responsibility to accept that call and to find our place in those plans and to see how God will use us in those plans and to be open to his call. And so Noah, the last several weeks, has been talking about this idea of joining in and thinking about our role in engaging in the mission of Jesus. And he called it the path of a healthy disciple. And it's founded on our church motto or our church purpose, which is to love God, grow deeper, and ultimately share Jesus by the things we say, the things we do. And we do that. The path of a healthy disciple is finding and discovering Jesus, making that decision to follow Jesus, being changed by Jesus, and also joining in the mission of Jesus. And I think we all need to understand that it's not like that first step, we need to do that perfectly and completely before we go to the next step. And then I have to be perfectly changed into the likeness of Jesus in a perfect way before I can engage in the mission of Jesus. It's a process. All of these elements are something, you know, this is a decisive decision that we make to follow Jesus. But beyond that, hopefully all of us have never, none of us have gotten to the point where we can say, hey, I've arrived, I'm perfect, I've been changed, I don't need to do any more changing or growing. And it's the same way in joining the mission of Jesus. And so you think about this whole idea of looking at ourselves as people who have been called by the Lord to engage in that mission. And there's all many different kinds of ways that we can do that. And so I'm just going to use this story, this account that we find in three of the four Gospels about how Jesus entered into Jerusalem for that last time. And I'm not going to go into the background and the details of all of that this morning. I don't have time to do that. But that last final entry of Jesus going into Jerusalem, some people call that his triumphal entry. And so he goes in humbly and meekly on a donkey. And you can read about that prophecy in the book of Zechariah in the 9th chapter, how the king comes to you riding on a donkey, on this colt, this young colt. And so when Jesus rode into Jerusalem that last time, he was accepted and received as a Messiah king. And people are praising him and saying, Hosanna in the highest. And they're waving the palm branches and throwing down their cloaks on the road before him as they welcome him in. But you and I know how that ended up, right? And about a week later, he wound up on a cross. And some of the very same people, perhaps, who were praising him, some of them turned and later may have been some of the very same people who said, crucify him, crucify him. From this mountaintop experience to the darkness of death in the tomb, but we know how the story goes, right? He didn't stay in the tomb. He rose to live again and to live forever. And he invites all of us into that mission of sharing that good news. But I just want to look at a little detail here about, you know, how this all happened and how somebody played a role in this event in the life of Jesus, but in a very obscure kind of way. I mean, they got this young colt because Jesus had instructed the disciples to go into town, and there's going to be a mother a donkey there with her colt, and I want you to go up and start taking those two animals. And Jesus said to them, when you start doing that, if somebody comes up to you and says, what are you doing? Why are you taking my colt? You simply ought to say, or you should say, the Lord needs it. Don't you love that? Don't you love that statement? Think about that statement. The Lord needs it. And I myself, I'm very curious. Do you ever read a passage like this and say, I'd like to know more of the story? For those of you who are old enough and remember Paul Harvey, and now you know the rest of the story. What about these owners? Did Jesus make arrangements ahead of time? Were some of these people his friends or his buddies or people that he knew? And he said, hey, look, I'm going to be sending my disciples to you later to get the colt. And you're going to know it's my disciples when you ask, what are you doing? And I don't know if all that was arranged. What do we know about the owners? In fact, we're not even told if it's a man or a woman or a husband and a wife or whatever. We're just... What were their names? I don't know. And which gets me to thinking about this question. How many names do you know? And let me put it to you this way. How many names of people do you know here at Northeast? Could you, if you were standing up here this morning looking out over this assembly that's gathered, could you name, how many of you think you could name half of the people in this auditorium by name? That's okay, raise your hand, that's all right. Now, I would hope every single elder raise their hand when I ask that question. Because we're in trouble if our elders don't know the names of half the people. And I know we have some guests, but I just think of this idea of names and knowing names or not knowing names, and whether that even matters. Does it even matter that we know the name of this man? And while there are some people, if I were to ask you, how many of you know Noah Eisenhower? Raise your hand if you know Noah Eisenhower. Raise it high. All right. But I could probably name other names of people who are connected and involved here at Northeast and ask you if you know their name, and many of you would not raise your hand because we don't know everybody's name. And sometimes we struggle with that. Maybe you're having a conversation with somebody and they say da 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 da, and they mention somebody's name and you say, well, who is that? And you say, oh, you know who they are. They're the one, they're about 6 foot tall. They have a beard, and you know, they're and then this is where you can really figure out who they are. One of the questions you ask is, where do they sit? Right? Well, where do they sit? Like, we have assigned seats here and we can only sit in certain places, but we know where they sit over there, you know, down the first base side on the corner. Oh yeah. I know who they are. Which kind of reminds me of this point that is related to this general idea about what it means to get involved in his mission and how God calls us to do that. It's this point that everybody matters. And you matter. Every one of you, every person here, whether you're a member of Northeast or not, you matter to God. And He is calling you into a relationship with him and to engage in the work he has called us all to do, but he's doing that in a very personal way. And it makes all kinds of people to make up a church. If you go to our website and go to some of the other literature, we have what we call our seven core values here at Northeast. And some of those core values are: is we want to have a biblical focus, we want to have inspiring worship, we want to be hospitable, we want to be people who live with integrity and try to practice what we preach, because we know that that can affect our impact on society. But one of those seven core principles is that we believe in unity in diversity. And what we mean by that is, we recognize that we are not all the same. We don't all look the same. We don't think the same. We don't always act the same. We come from different backgrounds. We're different in a lot of ways. And there are some of us who are more upfront, like Noah and the elders and others, that you would know their names. But there are people that you would not know their names. And so that reminds me of this very important principle that you see in the book of Ephesians. And in Ephesians 4, Paul is talking about the effective functioning of the body. And he says there at the end, toward the end of the chapter, not at the very end, but toward the end, he says, from him the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as, catch this, each part does its work. And so Paul's point there, as his point would also be in 1 Corinthians and in Romans 12, is that we are a body and we are not all the same. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the ear cannot say to another part of the body, I don't need you. We all need each other. You need others and others need you. And God is calling you into this connection and involvement with others here at this place. And it's important that all of us understand that. It's important that we understand that it's essential for me to see myself as somebody who is important, needed, connected, involved. Whether somebody knows your name or not. And I think of this whole idea of what do we do with those who are nameless to us anyway or more obscure. And how many times we are blessed by others and we benefit from others that on a daily basis that we don't even know their names. I mean, what'd you have for breakfast this morning? Cereal, maybe? So, you're able to eat that cereal because somebody stocked that cereal on a shelf at the store. If you ordered it and had it delivered, you had somebody deliver that to your house. And there was a farmer who grew the grain that you're able to eat that cereal because of somebody you don't know, you've never heard of them. And yet, you've been blessed by them. This morning, we took communion, and we had those little communion packs that we use. And I know a lot of times we don't think this way, but you have that because there are people that you don't know their names, who have done things to enable you to have that in your hand and be blessed in taking the Lord's Supper. And I know it almost seems mundane, but it's not. And so you think about the message in Scripture, and you think of all the people that you read about in the Bible, and more often than not, we have lots of names in the Bible, but there are countless, countless examples of people who did sometimes extraordinary things, and we don't even have their name, and sometimes they're very simple things. I think of a story in 2 Kings 5 of a army commander. You remember his name. His name was Naaman, and he had leprosy. And there wasn't anything he was able to do to rid himself of that leprosy, but he so happened in his home, his wife had a servant who worked for her, a servant girl, a Jewish servant girl, who said to her about the husband who had the leprosy, I know of someone in Israel who could take care of this problem for you. And he's a great prophet. And he's worked miracles. And so she speaks up. And eventually, long story short, I'm not going to get into it this morning, but eventually he winds up going to where Elijah was and being told to dip in the Jordan River 7 times. And he is just indignant about it. The muddy Jordan River, you could have asked me to do something more spectacular or one of the more large and impressive rivers where I come from. And on that occasion, another servant speaks up and says to Naaman, you would have been willing to do something heroic or great or something that would bring attention to yourself, but you can't do this simple thing to be cleansed. At least 2 or 3 people saying something to a person of power, helping them and serving them and doing something for them, but we don't know their names. We're not given their names. They just spoke up. What about a poor widow? Jesus on one occasion was standing there at the temple and people were dropping their contributions into the treasury box, and there were people who were rich and influential who were putting a lot of money into that box, and there's an obscure woman, a poor widow we're told, who put 2 small coins into that box. And Jesus used her as an example that we are still talking about today. Who was she? What was her name? Did she have any idea that in 2024, somebody would be up talking about her before others. So I hope you understand the point that I'm making here. And we need to step outside and consider this angle about the importance and the contribution of people that we may not think really matter that much. I mean, bring it down on a spiritual level where you are spiritually right now in your life. Who are the people who have blessed your life and brought life into your life spiritually? You could probably think of a lot of people, and you probably can name most of those people by name. But you know, when I was thinking about that over the last couple of weeks myself, I can't remember the name of every person who's had an influence in my life in a positive way. When my parents were going through a divorce at a young age, as many of you know, a lot of dysfunction in my family growing up, alcoholism and drug use and suicide and divorce and just an ugly family situation and an ugly divorce with the kids caught in the middle, it was a mess. And so I remember we were attending a church at that time periodically. And my parents were involved, my dad and my stepmother at the time were involved in this church. And I remember going to a Christian camp when I was about 9 or 10 years old. I don't even remember the name of the camp. But I do remember that while I was at that camp as a 9 or a 10-year-old, there was a counselor who made an impression on me and the other boys in the cabin. And it gave me a sense of hope and security. I can remember that. I can remember the good feeling and the difference that made in my attitude about life and faith. Go forward a few more years, and when I got involved in church with a friend of mine who invited me to church, I remember going to a Wednesday night Bible class for the first time at that church, the Memorial Parkway Church of Christ. And I remember a teacher in that class, and I went to it not all the time, but several times. I remember that teacher who brought the Bible alive to me and created a hunger in me to want more, to dig more. But I tell you, for the life of me, I cannot remember his name. But he played a role. And so here's some takeaways I have for you this morning about this whole point. Number one, don't minimize. Don't minimize how God can use you. It's important that we all understand, whoever we are, if I have answered the call to follow Jesus and I'm being changed by Jesus and I am joining the mission of Jesus, that I am his servant, I am his agent, that I have a sphere of influence. And your sphere of influence may not be like somebody else's, and it may not be in the same way, but it's still important that you are needed. You are needed by others. You may not be able to bless and serve others the way other people do, but what you do is still important. And I know I've talked to some of you, like me, you're getting older, right? I know it's hard to believe, you know. I know I look just like I did 30, 40 years ago, right? But I'm just struck by the things I can't do now that I used to. And I was just talking to somebody before church service this morning, And we're talking about how we feel when we get up. And you know, when I was Noah's age, I'd get up out of bed, man, I was ready. Now, my knee. You know, I hurt my knee about a month ago, and it's still sore. It's like, ugh. And so I know some of you, I've had conversations with you. You say, you know, I wish I could do more. I wish I could do what I used to do, but I'm just not able to do it. But there are still things for you to do. I remember the first year we came, there was an older couple here named Jim and Lillian Moore. And probably very few, if any of you remember them. This is from 30 plus years ago, 35. And she wasn't able to do much physically, but she could send cards. And that was her ministry. And if it was your birthday, if it was a special occasion, you could count on getting a card from her. And I tell you what, when she sent them, buddy, she sent them secure, because she was a woman who taped every crevice and crack in a card. Have you ever known anybody like that tapes up everything? She was so concerned about it, you know, breaking open. And you had to work to get it open because she had taped it so much. I think of somebody like Carolyn Caveman. And at one time, obviously, she's younger, she's more active, she's teaching Bible classes, she's involved in what's going on at the office with our communications. She and Jim blessed our church for a long time. And then she's pretty much shut in now, and as most of you know, doctors feel she may have had a mild stroke and is struggling, and, you know, she can't do what she used to do. And I know there's a part of her that just wishes that she could, but Carolyn is one of those who was so good about sending cards and communicating. Carolyn, if you're watching, I don't mean to embarrass you, but I just think we just need to think differently about some of those things. And just this idea of where I am in life, at this stage in life, I'm going to offer to God what I have, whatever that is. And so you remember the story from John chapter 5 and 6 and other places as well of the feeding of the 5,000. And you remember Jesus is teaching the multitudes. It's way past dinner time. The disciples have made the decision and they tell Jesus, we need to send these people away because they're hungry and we don't have enough food. We couldn't provide it. And then Jesus looks to them. This could be a whole nother sermon. I love it. Jesus looks at them and says, you give them something to eat. And he does that for a reason. He's telling them that to make them understand that there's no way they can provide this. There's no way that they on their own can do this. And so all they scrounge up are 5 loaves and 2 fish. Andrew finds a little boy and says, we don't have anything, but there's this boy here, and he has 5 loaves and 2 fish. But what is that to all these people? What was that little boy's name, by the way? Don't know. And yet, the Lord was able to take 5 loaves and 2 fish and multiply that. He can take what you have, your gifts, your talents, where the stage you are in life, and use that in his kingdom to bless others. And he's calling you to that. Another quick takeaway: don't obsess over comparing yourself with others. We make that mistake sometimes, don't we? We think about all those great people of faith, all those people in the Bible, all those famous people with the big names, the great people of faith, and we say, well, I could never be like them. God's not necessarily calling you to be like them, per se. He's just saying, what do you have? What are you going to do with it? the Lord needs it. That's what he said to the owners of that donkey. Don't get caught up comparing yourselves with others. You have something to bring to the table, and the Lord needs it. And this is a big one. Maybe sometime I'll have a chance to talk more about this, but we make a mistake if we just measure life by the big events. You think of maybe the moment a person makes a decision to follow Christ and they're baptized into Christ. And boy, that is a big event, and that's something we should celebrate. But a lot of life and a lot of things went on before that person came to the point where they committed their life to Jesus and were buried with him in the waters of baptism, right? A lot of life, a lot of experience, a lot of influence. How many of you have lived, had the... been married for 50 years or more, okay? The cruise has just celebrated a 50th anniversary. That's a big event. It's worth celebrating, right? But a lot of life went on to lead to that point. A lot of plain, ordinary, mundane days and events. But we never know when the mundane and the ordinary and just serving at the place where God is putting me right now is going to make a big difference. And here's the last point. You never know when a small thing is going to make a big, big difference. You just don't know. The providing of this donkey, it was just a little thing, but it was big in its place. And it was a big event. But the small things add up. Several years ago, I read the account of Charles Adams, who is the son of John Quincy Adams and the grandson of John Adams, who was a diplomat. He was a politician in the early 1800s. And he, on one occasion, they actually found his diary. And one of the entries in that diary was, "Went fishing with my son today, a day wasted." And I'm sure he wasn't trying to be cruel in saying that, but maybe just in the scheme of things, he was important. He was an influential person. In the scheme of things, he just didn't feel that like that was very important. But later on, his son Brooks would recall those days when his dad took the time to take him fishing, and he later reflects that some of those days were some of those the most wonderful days of his life. And let me make this last point. And this is something I've shared with you before, but I can't say it enough. Noah's been talking about engaging in the mission of Jesus. And last week, he talked about the power of an invitation. Come and see. And I believe I am standing before you this morning and have engaged in 40 plus years of ministry because somebody did the very simple thing of inviting me. My life could have been so different. A small thing, but such a big thing. The Lord needs it. The Lord needs you. Right where you are. So what do you do with this? I just encourage you to continue exploring ways to find your place in his mission. And that may involve stretching some and doing something that you haven't done before. But I want you to do what you need to do that's consistent with your gifts and your abilities and your talents. Don't try to be somebody else. Don't look negatively at yourself because you can't do what other people are doing. But pray about it. Get involved in some way in God's kingdom work. And maybe you're ready to make a decision. Maybe you're ready to make that commitment, that decision right now. I want to follow Jesus. I want to give my life to him. I know he died for me and was raised from the dead, and I'm ready to identify with what he did to save me in baptism. And just as Jesus died and was buried and raised from the dead, I'm going to go down in that water and commit to Jesus and being saved by his goodness and his grace. So we want to help you however we can. So let us know. Thank you for being here this morning. God bless you as you pursue his call in your life. Let's stand and sing.